Homage to the Buddha.
Homage to the Dharma. Homage to the Sangha. I was talking yesterday and using the analogy, the metaphor of a snowplow plowing its way through a bunch of snow on a road. I talked about meditating and asking the Eternal for help and offering to the Eternal in meditation, offering up the whatever the problem is in meditation as a way to allow the Eternal to help us when we're really up against it, when we've, as it were, to use that, to invoke that metaphor, when we have a big mass of ice stuck to our blade and our snowplow isn't plowing properly. Well, to extend that metaphor just a little bit, we could say that what I emphasized in my talk yesterday is a kind of clog on the clogged mass stuck to the blade that is a result of karmic consequence. Past karma coming due is another way of putting that. Getting some heavy karmic consequences from the past. Well, of course, in our daily lives, we can't help making karma. And in our training, we're trying to make mostly the karma that leads to liberation from suffering rather than the karma that deepens suffering. Inevitably, being human, we have our struggles in perceptual areas. When we get sufficiently confused, we can rapidly accumulate a mass of ice on the blade of our snowplow. And it is, of course, the point of the precepts to help us live in such a way that we don't willfully impede our own progress. We don't willfully clog up the blade of our snowplow. However, when this happens, again being human, it happens to all of us from time to time. The same procedure that I described yesterday is the way to go about it, to clean that blade off again. In addition, as we train with the situation that is the result of our own actions, we have the possibility of learning how to go about things in a wiser way. And of course, there can be many facets to these lessons. You know, life itself, and especially the consequences of our own actions, are our best teachers on a day-to-day basis. When we look at River Master's commentary on the precepts, we get a good view of the main facets of preceptual training. And there's one facet that is emphasized, it's not even a facet, it's a root principle that is emphasized above everything else. And that is the taking refuge directly in the Eternal, looking to the Eternal for guidance in what to do, being willing to ask and to listen and to wait patiently, to offer up our own opinions, our own impulses, our own desires and pain, and then of course the willingness to follow the lead that the Eternal provides. River Master so often emphasized that Training is like walking on the razor's edge. And if you ever watch one of these people who walks tightrope, you see that however skilled they are, they're walking in a way that shows that they are very aware that they can lose their balance. And you can see them over and over again catching themselves when they start to lean a little bit to one side or the other and reestablishing their balance. Well, a razor's edge, of course, is much, much, much finer than a tightrope. So there's no question of being able to walk that razor's edge without constant attentiveness to the whole question of maintaining one's balance. And this is an area in which the precepts and meditation overlap in a critical way. We need the awareness of meditation to maintain that perceptual balance. And we need perceptual training to keep that blade of the snowplow clean. I think you're not supposed to mix metaphors, but if I haven't mixed those two metaphors inextricably, I'd be surprised. Nonetheless, I think the point's clear enough. Presumably, we won't end up with a snowplow running over a tightrope walker. The last point that I want to emphasize in this talk . One that, again, River Master often stressed, that we can only do our own training. And however difficult it may be to do our own training, it is something that we can actually do. It's possible. However, it simply is not possible to do any other person's training for them. People can lend a hand to one another in need, but no one can spiritually save another person. When we love other people deeply, I think I'd like us to understand that I'm using the word people, I mean beings in general. It can be any being, it doesn't have to just be a human being. But when we love any being, we deeply identify with that being. Although we all have a sense of what that means, that's really not the most accurate way of putting it. I think it's better to say that love opens our eyes in a certain way to our essential oneness with others. Yeah, while it opens our eyes, ignorance can at the same time blind us to the fact that after all, that being that we love is different from ourselves and does not belong to us, nor do we belong to it. So we have to find a way to not abandon or forsake that recognition of the oneness, and at the same time we need the wisdom to recognize that that oneness is oneness in the eternal, in the eternal, not a oneness that gives us possession or gives another possession of us. In other words, when we love another, when another loves us, it is the shared Buddha nature that we are recognizing. And when love becomes anguished, we need to remember to go to the eternal, offer up those we love, and love itself. Otherwise, we get stuck with the external appearances of things. And that can be a very, very great anguish. Because everyone we love, everything we love, is like ourselves, part of a world that is impermanent. But what love is, in its essential nature, is not impermanent. It is of the eternal. What all beings are in their essential nature is not impermanent, for they are of the eternal. The experience of love is so powerful, and our longing for it is so deep, that it can seem an impossibility to actually let go of that which we love, offering it into the arms of the eternal. Yet it is possible to do, and the results of it are wonderful and deeply consoling.